the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. My friends and enemies, we got a little carried away at the beginning of this episode, so I forgot to read the sponsor ad from our pals over at ShakePay, the best place for Canadians to buy and sell, though you should never sell, your Bitcoin. They have the Shaking Sats feature. If you sign up with our promo code CBP, you shake your phone every day, get a couple of sats right to your pocket, right to your dome on the house, up to 1,000 sats after 200 days of shaking. Not bad. They, of course, have the Sats Back card as well, so if you spend out of your CAD balance, you can get a little bit of Satoshis added to your ShakePay balance, which is another way to just grow your Bitcoin stack. Can't get enough of those these days. There's not too many reliable faucets left here in the year of our Lord, 2022. And finally, if you do spend off your CAD balance on your Sats Back card, there's a chance you get ShakePaid. They'll just cover your purchase, I think up to 300 or 500, something like that, in Satoshis, which is dope. So give them a look. Use our code CBP and enjoy the show. Take care of yourselves. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, the usual Monday flagship rip that you know and love. My name is Joey, here as always with my co-host Len. How are you doing there, buddy?
I'm great, Joey. I played golf last week, which was fantastic. So yeah, it's all good here. So it's getting into the swing of things for summer. How are things over there?
Good, man. So some personal news. I was on the anti-gravity treadmill today at physiotherapy. So I was doing almost a jog, 70% body weight.
Is it by the slinging you somehow?
And no, it's a negative pressure chamber from your waist down.
Explain that. I don't not understand this.
Okay, so I'm gonna step away from the mic and I'll show you exactly. Okay, and you tell me if you can still hear me. Can you hear me? Okay, over here.
Yeah.
How about over here?
You still hear me? Okay, yeah, so it's a faint, but I can still hear you.
They put like these shorts on you that you got to pull up. They're basically like skin tight shorts.
Uh-huh.
On top of the shorts, there's a lip that's maybe 3 inches around, all the way around your waist. And you step into this treadmill that has like a bag basically on it. And the bag fills up after you zip up the zipper thing with the lip of the bag.
Yeah.
Sort of connected. And once you do that,
it fills up with what, air or water or something?
Air. And so it finds your body weight, calibrates it for your body weight, and then you tell it how much you want on there. So I was on there 70% today, which is higher than they wanted to go, but lower than I wanted to go. And we found a happy medium at 70. I think probably I'm going to try running, maybe not next week, but maybe the week after, at like 70 or 60%. Incredible piece of technology. Does everything as far as like the body weight control, which is sick. But on top of that, it actually has this like display where you can see a video of your legs underneath you. So you can see exactly how your gait looks. Cause I haven't walked regular speed now in 3 months, basically. And so you can see your gait. And then also it tells you how much weight you're putting on each foot for your body weight. So
wow, that's pretty sophisticated.
It's nuts. So generally speaking, you're at about 52, 48, 53, 47 most of the time for most people, just depending on the weight, your way you're walking.
And it's so never 50-50?
Almost never. And they got that going on. And then on top of that, they tell you how long your step is and how long your foot is on the ground for. So all these things together sort of tell them where you need to do work, right? And so just depending on like how much your arch has fallen. So my arch and that foot has fallen a little bit, all this stuff. Crazy. The amount of technology in that device. Unreal, man. I got to give a shout out to the people at Preferred Rehab in Hamilton. They've been taking good care of me and pushing me, especially the last few weeks. So big shout out to those guys over there. Keep it coming. We're almost there. I'll be playing football again before you know it, ready to make some other mistake with my physical well-being. Alain, you're wearing a shirt today. You want to talk about where you got it from?
Let's get into that momentarily. Let's first talk about the price of Bitcoin before we really dive into this, because this is going to take a little bit of time. So okay, I can tell you, if you're not ready, I got the price of Bitcoin handy.
No, I got it. 40,322 US right now. Not bad. Not a bad day.
So 51,423 in Canuck bucks. So yeah, the shirt I'm wearing today, it's hard to see, so I'll stand up. You can see Well, stupid camera. There it is. See? The Your Life, Your Times podcast.
Your Life, Your Terms.
Tom and Nick. What's your last name? I keep forgetting the last name.
Karadza.
Yeah, yeah. We were on their podcast, and it's being released tomorrow?
Yeah.
Check it out. See, it was a good rip. They kicked us out early because they had some bigger and better things to do. Apparently, they got... they're frying some bigger fish than us. And we couldn't stay as long as we wanted to. Thanks a lot, guys. But it was a hell of a rip. And I look forward to going back on. But it was more to talk about it. We just didn't get to it all in one session, unfortunately.
It's quite a setup they have there. So Rockstar Real Estate in Toronto, or I guess Mississauga.
No, Oakville.
Oakville, yeah. It's a really nice office they got. They're both very kind guys. Nick and Tom were gracious hosts, and we met some of the staff, talked to a few people who were working there. Everyone seems happy, man. And you know, we've been now to two different away games offsite, and both Bitby and Tom and Nick, they're all really good people. And it's funny, you know, we actually found out about Tom and Nick through Jordan Anderson. When I was doing some Oppo research on Jordan before he came on the show the first time, I landed on Tom and Nick's show. And so we were able to kind of find out about them that way. And they become a rotation play for me on my pods, my pod listening, hours on Saturday morning. So dope.
So their rip with Lynn Alden was really good. I enjoyed that one.
Yeah.
And they have Foss coming up not too long from now. They're getting a lot of people like into Bitcoin and traditional finance and so forth. So there's, listen to them. They're really, really good. Plus we were on there. So yeah. Like what else could you say about that?
I mean, yeah. So support the boys, cause your boys are on there. Yeah. It was good. I enjoyed it. I can't wait to go back. I do enjoy talking about Bitcoin, and they bring a lot of valuable insight too from the real estate side of things. They're bright guys, right? Nothing to turn your nose up at over there at Rockstar. That's for sure. Very impressive stuff.
And this Saturday we have, there's an event in Whitby. I'm going to be attending it. It's a big Bitcoin meetup. Shake Pay is going to be there. I believe they're sponsoring it. So there's going to be, I think it's drinks. Tahini's is going to be showing up. Foss, myself, a whole bunch of people are going to be there. And so, yeah, if you want details on that, just let me know. I'll be happy to provide you the details. But it's happening this Saturday from 2 to 5. It would be.
I will not be there. I have a wedding to go to. My cousin's getting married on Saturday. So once again, sitting out another event. It looks like I might be the prisoner of the two of us now. I know I was giving you shit for a long time, but it seems like maybe I'm the one who can't leave the house.
I'm not allowed to leave here. It's just in short, very short spurts. So I have to take this for granted. And when I do go out, I really enjoy it. But then I have to come back here and train myself back up in my area. So yeah. So I think you're a little bit more free than I am.
That's all good, man. It's all good. Let's get into it, shall we? We've got a couple of big stories here. Obviously some big news today. I'm sure we'll talk about that as well.
Let's just talk about that off the bat. I know I didn't have notes for that. I didn't this is the biggest news of the day, week, month, whatever. It's Elon buying Twitter. And this is an incredible turn of events considering what happened. We had some grumblings. It looks like that the board initially might have been humming and hawing about this purchase, and they just decided to take the offer and run with it because it makes total sense. The shareholders were going to hold them to task if they didn't take this offer. It didn't make any sense to control the narrative and reject the offer. They had to take it because if they're there to represent the shareholders' best interests, this is one of the things they have to do is accept an offer that is much, much higher than it is on the open market. Because let's be honest, before Elon came in the picture, Twitter was trading in the high 30s, $39, $38, $40, whatever it may be. To get an offer of $54, that's a significant gain. And the board could not discount that. Granted, there are no coiners. They hold very, very little of the Twitter stock in totality. And so they don't have much skin in the game. But they saw the writing on the wall. They had no option here. They were checkmated by Elon Musk. This is an incredible turn of events. What's going to happen moving forward? Who knows? Elon's talking about opening things up in the Twitter world, making things a little bit more, a little less censored in that regard. I'm not sure how far he's going to be going with this. Maybe if it's going to be the Wild West or just still going to be some hindrance of censorship. But I don't know. A lot of people are very upset. A lot of people are very happy. It is what it is. I mean, somebody bought Twitter. It, same thing happened with Washington Post and a bunch of other things. Bloomberg is owned by a billionaire. This is par for the course. And here we are again. I hope they don't introduce Doge into this. But if they do, it's just, I guess, a small price to pay.
Oh, man. What a day today. Really, you know, I won't say much about the business side. I'll just say a couple things here. Some of the spaces I was in today, and I'm sure many of you are as well, listening to this stuff and finding out more about the news and the sort of process, procedural stuff behind the acquisition, or the, I guess, the takeover, we'll call it. Since it's a done deal now, we can say that safely. There's a lot of lack of understanding, I think, about what a board's responsibility is when an offer like this comes through. I heard someone today from Forbes Business talking about how he thought that Elon had spoken to the board members over the weekend and changed their mind about accepting the offer. That's not at all how these things work. There's laws related to their fiduciary responsibility and the responsibility they have to the shareholders and to the company's stakeholders. It's not about whether Elon Musk beat them in rock, paper, scissors on Saturday night when it comes to whether or not to sell the company. And just incredible sort of lack of understanding across the traditional media spectrum about how these things are how these things procedurally happen and are executed. So one thing to keep in mind, just watch this stuff with a critical eye. Other thing, man, Len, the crying and whining today from the you know blue check the blue check you know Twitterati. Incredible stuff, man. Like we have for the first time, I think, you know, really taking the mask off of this. And, you know, you and I think this already. I think many people who listen to the show and watch the show feel the same way, but there's really no doubt that the mask is off at this point, right? Obama and Clinton, of course, last week coming in to discuss the sanctity of online online discourse, as long as it's to their benefit, which we'll talk about during the program today. Number of different Canadian celebrities as well. Rosie Barton, most notably, I think, threatened to leave Twitter if Elon vowed, yeah, to leave Twitter. These people are all Twitter poisoned anyway. Okay, they're Twitter sick. They're never leaving. They can't. And I'll just, you know, to close off, because I think to Narwhal's point, I think a lot of people come here to not talk about Twitter and Musk, which I appreciate. I'll just say, like I said last week, man, if you don't like it, build your own fucking platform and go there. You'll find that it's just not quite as easy as you've been telling us that it is for the last 5 years. So no sympathy for me. I'm happy to see the tears, the crying, and the sort of general attitude toward censorship suddenly become one of concern for the other side. It's long overdue, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and nothing else I gotta say about this. It looks like that there are people in the chat that just want to avoid this talk, so we should probably just dive into the other stories we have prepped for to talk about today. And unless you want to finalize that one last thought on that topic, it's
I got nothing else, man. I'm happy to see it. Let's see what Elon does with the thing. I hope he takes it seriously. That's the only thing I'm concerned about, is that he kind of just fluffs us off and, you know, the thing burns to the ground or something. But otherwise, no, I'm good. Let's get into the Bitcoin news. There's plenty to talk about.
So number one, we'll talk about Russia and Bitcoin miners being sanctioned over there. And this is coming from an April 20th, 2022 report coming from the U.S. Department of the Treasury's Office of Foreign Assets Control. And they imposed sanctions on that day on Russian Bitcoin miners. And there's a quote that says, by operating vast server farms that sell virtual currency mining capacity internationally, these companies help Russia monetize its natural resources. So by this sanction, there's going to be consequences, not just the miners that are running within Russia that are going to be sanctioned, but it's going to impact U.S. citizens that are mining in Russia. For example, you have Compass Mining, and they have customers that were mining Bitcoin out of Russia up until this news came out. And what happened here was that it's a tough situation Compass was in. They essentially painted themselves into a corner here, but the customers are now going to have their equipment liquidated, and the earnings or proceeds are going to be returned back to the customers. That's tough to swallow. But after the war started, it was inevitable that something like this was going to happen, but we could talk about this a little bit later on. And not only that, there's also other types of impacts here. For example, it looks like that the New York proof of work ban is supposed to vote on today. I'm not sure if it was voted on, but this is something else that you hear about. So like you have these two types of negative stories, one coming from the federal government, another one coming from the state. So it looks like there's a shift right now for the narrative to try to hurt Bitcoin mining by both the Fed and a particular state. But I think this is more just timing and just coincidental news more than anything else. But it just seems rather suspicious that they came out so very close to each other. But going back to the Russia thing, looking back at it, it just seemed like this type of this decision by the U.S. government was rather obvious, considering their stance on how they're viewing the war with Ukraine and Russia. And they're very much supporting Ukraine and very much against the Russia for what they're doing here. So you really can't fault them for putting sanctions on stuff like Bitcoin mining that's being done in Russia. But one thing that they don't understand is monetization of energy will continue. Bitcoin is decentralized. Really, nobody could stop the mining operations in a sovereign nation from continuing to be awarded Bitcoin by running ASICs on their network. This is something a foreign nation cannot impose on a sovereign nation. This is just something that's not going to happen. How could they impose these type of sanctions and expect them to have any bite? It's truly toothless. It just makes no sense to me. And what is odd, I tried looking at the U.S. Department of Treasury Office of Foreign Assets Control. It's quite a mouthful to swallow there. But I tried to look at their website to see if I could find anything else that was similar to other energy-rich nations like Venezuela and Iran. I found nothing. So this is only that strictly centered around Russia. I suspect over time they're going to expand this type of ruling towards Iran and Venezuela and other, I don't want to call them enemy to states, more like non-friendly environments, but I suspect that's going to be rolled out moving forward. But really what this shows me is a number of different things. And number one, it looks like the USA is, they're losing an economic war, the US dollar over time, and each day it's less prevalent. And another thing, the USA, they're enforcing and implying more of these old sanctions trick on something that can't be sanctioned. It's just something that's outside their control, and this doesn't really work. And another thing, it shows me that those that have excess energy, they have an opportunity now to elevate themselves with or without the United States on board. They have the opportunity, they could parlay this excess energy into mining Bitcoin and to make money by doing so, creating wealth in this country, in their countries. But really, this type of news, like, it just, it's old hat to me, but it just shows me that the United States, they're kind of out of touch. I'm not sure exactly what they're trying to achieve here, what their end goal is. Really, Bitcoin is going to run with or without sanctions being imposed on Russia. Bitcoin doesn't need a United States. Sanctions doesn't hurt anything. It's a decentralized network. Bitcoin is still going to be mined. And it just goes to show you that the United States, they are out of touch with what's going on. Is this going to impact the price of Bitcoin? Maybe in the short term, but honestly, on the medium to long term, it's going to have zero impact, in my opinion.
Yep. How come you didn't tell me how burnt my face looks? We've been on the call here for almost 20 minutes. I was outside yesterday, and I look like I'm, I was outside in the Sahara Desert.
Is it burnt? I can't really tell.
I'm completely fried. My forehead is completely fried.
When I went golfing the day after, my head was... I was like a cherry on top, but it takes a good couple of sessions, and then that's it. I'm good to go, and I got.
That's right. Okay, let's talk about this, because there's some stuff here that I think you and me agree on, and maybe some stuff we don't. But there's for sure some stuff that we can tie a nice knot around that we've had come from guests on the show over the last little while. So Ben Gagnon, okay, show favorite, fan favorite in the mining space, talked a bit about the importance of political stability in mining operations. Some of the reasons they're not particularly keen on going to a lot of areas that some of the other miners seem to be keen on. We'll talk about Compass in a sec, but the point that he was making, I think, is one that really hits hard this week. You cannot put a price on political stability. Kilowatt hours fluctuate in price, power availability fluctuates in price, all that stuff, right? But the difficulty you run into if you are dealing with a sort of dictatorial government, you know, it's a problem. That's one piece of this puzzle. Then you think about, if you're dealing in a country that doesn't want to ban your mining, but the United States then comes after them through, economic means, like you mentioned there, kind of opening up an attack vector during a hot and cold war at the moment. What can you do about that? what is the plan for a company like Compass when something like that happens? It's very difficult to contend with these things. And, you know, like you said, the decentralization of the network is an important piece, but some of these things are going to get difficult, Len. And it's not just Russia. Compass, you know, you may have also heard on Friday, we were talking with someone in Spaces, and I think you and I talked about this too. Compass's contract in Quebec is not being renewed. Did you know that?
They're going to be all moved to Ontario, and there's going to be a period of downtime while the miners are going to be shipped over to Ontario, and the customers are going to be at the loss during that time, unfortunately.
That's really tough. And, you know, that's what you're seeing there is centralization of mining hardware, mining firepower, mining capacity, hash rate. And we don't want that. We've talked on this show many times. Many people have discussed the importance of you know, distributed hash rate as part of the sort of resiliency of the network. So, you know, Compass has been taking a beating, obviously. That's fine. From a business perspective on Compass, do you think they handled this well? Because, you know, when you were reading the story, I just took another quick look here to make sure I wasn't speaking out of turn. But on their Twitter, there's still not an announcement about the Russia thing. Nowhere. The only reason any of us know about this is because people are taking screenshots of a Discord chat. Did you know that? Like, have you seen any announcement anywhere from them? Or are you seeing the same screenshots as anyone else?
It's the screenshots that I saw, but I'll be perfectly honest. I haven't gone on their Twitter page. So this is news to me that they didn't announce anything on their Twitter page.
Yeah, they haven't put anything there. So you got people who are potentially, I guess, looking at Compass Mining, you know, and thinking about becoming a customer, client, and it's not on their Twitter page anywhere. It's only in their Discord chat. Like, to me, it's not good business is what it is. And I feel for people who are involved with this. I think last week we talked a bit about McCormick and Spaces and how he's a guy who has them advertising at the beginning of his show. He's arguably the biggest show in the space. I'm curious to hear if he keeps them on board because it's one thing to have trouble. It's another thing entirely to, you know, tell your customers that everything's all good at the beginning of the month, which they did. They sent out an email saying everything was all good. And, you know, even if everything was fine, Len, I think that you and I agree, you really need a backup plan for probably most of your jurisdictions. If you're operating in some of these places like Russia, you know, no matter where you're operating, even if you're like you mentioned, you're operating in Quebec and having their contract expire at the end of this quarter, I think you always need a contingency plan. And it seems to me they didn't have one. Even during a hot war, you didn't think that you'd have to get those miners out or start thinking about what you could do or thinking about how to act on this. It's got to be frustrating. As far as mining and the defense mechanism that mining offers to Bitcoin as a network and as an asset, jurisdictional arbitrage is going to be big in the next, you know, year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, whatever, as Bitcoin continues to grow. And as the threat to modern governments and modern currencies continues to grow, continues to really come into focus for those governments, there's going to be places where mining is really appreciated as an industry, both for its, you know, agility on the power grid and agility on the oil field and agility, you know, many other different pros and pros, I should say, you know, but included in those pros is not just the grid stuff. There's a lot of good, smart people involved in Bitcoin mining, many of whom we've spoken to, many of whom you all follow on Twitter and talk to on podcasts and listen to on podcasts. And the jurisdictional arbitrage is going to become apparent, I think. The problem that we're having right now is that it's hard to put this into words, but I'll try anyway. There's a difficulty, I think, for a lot of smart people who want to get into the space or who want to be prominent in the space, especially in mining and energy. Because of the constant pressure from all sides. It's the green and renewables, it's the ESG, it's the Bitcoin is destroying the environment, it's the hyperinflation is not something you should ever say or talk about. There's all kinds of pressure keeping good people from popping their head up, right? And those people end up having to go to other industries or working in something adjacent, blah, blah, blah. The countries, states, whatever, that embrace this technology and embrace these people are going to really benefit, but they're not going to benefit right away. It's going to take 5 or 10 years, the same way that many of these sorts of things take time to materialize and take time for the the tangible benefits to show. This next little while then, like let's say this is year zero to five, where a lot of good people are going to want to be in Bitcoin. We have to find places to give these people jobs in Bitcoin, opportunities for them to become faces of the franchise, so to speak, for the asset class. I really hope that we can do this somehow. I think there's some good news coming out of the States this week. I think Dennis Porter's hosting a space tomorrow with breaking. I think he's hosting a space tomorrow with a state.
Lummis? In,
no, it's not. It's not with Lummis. It's
is it Tennessee with, maybe?
Yeah, they're about to hold on their balance sheet, and then I think there's another.
That's true. We'll talk about that. That's misleading.
So there's that one, and there's another one, another jurisdiction that's about to start mining. I think, according to our boy DP, I don't know if that's
it's actually a city in Texas, isn't it?
It could be, yeah. So some other jurisdiction. I mean, that's good news, but I just don't know if it's enough, right? Like we got to really push this thing forward. That's why I think it's important when you and me do the show. You know, we talk a lot about how we try not to mince words about the importance of stuff like framing ESG for what it is. And I was really happy to see some of the stuff that Peter Thiel said at the Bitcoin conference. But when you think of ESG, you think of CCP, et cetera, right? Enemies of Bitcoin, that whole spiel. It's important stuff. I am a little worried for the next 2-3 years to see who sort of, you know, is just too beat down, doesn't have the conviction to really make a make their presence felt in the space. But overall, I think if you're a miner and you're in Bitcoin, you're looking at the stuff that's going on in Russia, stuff that's happening with Compass, et cetera. The thing to take from all this is that decentralization is not only important, it's a requirement for Bitcoin to be successful. And jurisdictional arbitrage opportunities are right now, I think, at an all-time high. And Bitcoiners so far have been really good at taking advantage of those opportunities when they present themselves. Let's see if they can do it again.
This is probably going to give a renaissance. It will make a whole new renaissance for home mining. Is now you're going to have a lot of these jurisdictions that are going to have issues with gathering the capital required to set up Bitcoin mining operations. And Russia's going to have that type of problem moving forward, I would imagine. But to go back to Compass and how they dealt with this whole situation, I don't want to like really harp on it too much because, hindsight is 20/20. But at the start of the war, they should have at least figured out, you know, some sort of plans, as you say, contingency plans to figure out what would happen just in case this sanction ended up coming into effect. And because it doesn't seem like it was too far-fetched that this sanction to come.
Or even before the war, right? Russia is a place that has, like, you know, it's a short list of countries that have more potential for turmoil than Russia does, right? Mm-hmm. You should have had a plan. And again, like easy armchair quarterbacking from you and me on this, obviously, but like, come on, the plan can't be hastily put together Discord messages asking if I can sell your miner at some market price without, you know what I mean? Like I can't be the answer.
You could have went to Inner Mongolia. It's been a while since we have an Inner Mongolia report on this show.
Hear about Inner Mongolia again, it'll be too soon.
Remember those weekly Inner Mongolia reports?
You were really crushing the pronunciation. That was the show's infancy, right? We were like, yeah. we were talking about Inner Mongolian mining every week. I can't believe people stuck around for that.
That was great. It was gold. But anyways, Joey, I think that's enough for that topic. We should move on to the next one. There's so much more else to talk about. And right now there's something called the Digital Service Act, and this is a new act that's being proposed in the EU. And what this is going to be doing is dealing with illegal content, transparency, advertising, and disinformation on the internet. And this is going to impact platforms like Google, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and a whole bunch of others. And this act is proposed to make internet space in European Union much more safer for European citizens. I'm not sure how it's going to achieve this type of goal, but really that's what it's trying to achieve. And the issue I have is that somebody or a group of people are going to make the decision on what is safe and what is not safe. And we kind of just went through this with Twitter. I don't want to rehash that, but it just doesn't seem like this is the right course of action to take. And this almost reminds me of the saying, absolute power corrupts absolutely, because you're going to have some people here or a group of people or maybe a single person, who knows, that is going to have they're going to hold the gavel and they'll be the judge, jury, and executioner in this type of situation. And right now, is the internet unsafe for people in the EU? I mean, I don't know. I don't live there, but
dangerous, Len. Dangerous there.
So, is this type of act, is it required for the citizens of the EU? I don't know. It's hard for me to say, but I could say one thing though: the act itself is being supported by Hillary Clinton. So, figure out, you know, if it's good or bad that she's supporting it, and she's stating that this will bolster global democracy before it's too late. It just seems to me that by stifling somebody's voice, you're increasing democracy. It just seems like it's counterintuitive to me. It seems like it's more oppressive than democratic, if anything, but that's just my two cents. I could be totally off this one. Again, like it's another step in the wrong direction, and this could negatively impact Bitcoin because, you know, all those Bitcoin fixes this memes, are they going to be allowed on this thing? You know, when they talk about central banks and Bitcoin fixes this, will this be allowed under this new type of law for the EU? Are they going to allow us to talk about how currencies lost their value over the past few years, 100 years, 2 years, whatever it may be? Is this something that's going to be allowed, or is this misinformation? I'd love to know. And it's not too long that if this thing is ever passed, it's going to spread into other areas of the world. In fact, we have C11 in Canada, and it's going to be touching on a lot of the same things in this act being proposed by the European Union. So over here in Canada, we might be subjected to the same thing. And, you know, if you think that this is just going to be something that's going to be limited to that, it's going to go even further. Like right now, you could even, I could bring up another instance, Binance, they're currently limiting service for Russian nationals living in Europe. So those Russian nationals living in Europe that have over 10,000 euros on their account, they have limited service on Binance. Why? This is another thing that you have these ideas that you're trying to harm, or you think you're trying to harm a nation, but you're actually harming an individual person. So really, I don't buy a lot of these type of rules, these whole type of policies, because they're not thought out in totality. There's going to be some repercussions. You're going to hurt people in the end. If you take away some of their freedoms, they're just going to find other ways to get around it. And it may not be the best way to go about this. It's almost you give an inch, you take a mile type thing. And I wouldn't want to give these people anything, not even a millimeter, not even an inch, nothing, because I'm not sure how far they're going to take it. And I don't know, I'm not sure how much money Elon Musk has out there to keep buying our way out of this and have our freedoms continually published on the internet. But who knows? He has deep pockets.
This is very curious timing again on this show. It seems like you and I are constantly talking about the curious timing of these sorts of things, that Hillary and Barack, Hillary, the pantsuit prowler herself, coming out of whatever cave she's been in for the last 5 years and talking about digital online platforms, the requirement for digital online platforms to govern more tightly the free, quote unquote, free speech that their platform enables. It's pretty telling, I think. I saw a good tweet today about someone who was working at Twitter talking about how they didn't know if they were going to have a job because their job right now was safety and health of the trending section on Twitter. I got bad news for that person. And, you know, and this sort of in the same vein, Hillary and Barack talking about these things, there is no such thing as the health and, safety of the trends section. What you're doing is called narrative control. And it's clear to me that there's an important element of one political party at the moment in jeopardy, judging by the feedback that we're getting over the Elon Twitter thing. And now, of course, this Digital Services Act in the EU also starting to pop up. So do you think, Len, that this is the sort of opening salvo into this battle? Or do you think that this is a test balloon kind of thing where they're just going to float this, see if people are okay with it, see who's okay with it. And then, in a year or so, they're going to push for some stricter legislation or stricter restrictions because, you know, and a lot can happen in a year, right? The thing before you answer, the other thing I would say is that everything that we've been told was misinformation over the last like 4 years, how much of it was actually misinformation? Like 5%, 10% maybe? Like the hit rate's not really that good for people who are censoring stuff. I'm thinking specifically at the moment anyway, about like, you know, the desperation that people had when Trump was a candidate in 2016 and, you know, all through his 4 years in office, so desperate that Omarosa somehow become a media darling. You know, she hasn't been a prominent figure anywhere, politics, economics, anywhere really since her time on The Apprentice. She guaranteed them some kind of controversy. I don't remember if it was a racial slur on tape or sexual comment on tape. I forget. But I mean, certainly this shows, I think, most sane people, you know, really what the mask off looks like. It's narrative control. So do you think this is a sort of a test balloon, or you think this is really the opening salvo of the battle?
I think it's the latter of the two. Given what happened in France, the election that took place, I think that the winds are blowing in that direction. And I'm not looking forward to this because it's just the first of many that are going to be coming. Do you think that a central bank digital currency is going to be coming down the future? I think so too. Do you think that you're going to have passports that are going to limit your ability to move based on what you inject in your body? I would imagine so. So there's going to be a lot that's going to be coming down the pipe, and this is just the beginning of it.
I hope you're wrong, but honestly, Len, I'm not willing to really bet against you, which sucks. As far as, you know, cancel culture and the tendency for the left to kind of, you know, use these types of legislation to control opposition, it's scary. It's worrying to me. We talked to Tom and Nick about, you know, what the importance of narrative control and how central banks have been using narrative control for a long time. And you mentioned it when you were talking about this story. You know, am I going to be allowed to discuss the currency losing value? Am I going to allow to discuss alternatives? It's difficult. It's difficult to say for sure, because it's pretty clear that the messaging goes out during a period of time where Twitter is upset that Dorsey used the word hyperinflation and said it's already happening. You know, he's closer to being right than he is to being wrong, I think, at least at the moment, given the statistical prints in the last 5 months. Is that something that's not going to be allowed anymore? Is the government going to say, you know, you're a national security threat by causing this sort of discourse, by encouraging this sort of dialogue? I don't know. As far as like the way that digital platforms enable this kind of censorship, this is really something that I think is flown under the radar, right? All of us use credit cards. All of us use bank accounts. You know, the bank accounts thing obviously came under a little bit of extra scrutiny back in January, February. All of us use this stuff, and it's so easy, as you mentioned, like people who have like put a Russian flag up on their lawn in the last like 6 months are now not allowed to use Binance or whatever, right? Like you can't do anything. Like people are friends of friends, and they can't, you know, play in a tennis tournament, for example, if they're a Russian citizen or were a Russian. I saw someone the other day in the NHL world. Well, someone in the NHL world, right? Talking about how Ovechkin should have to forfeit his Russian passport or he shouldn't be allowed to play anymore. Like that's, you know, That's a really brain take, right?
I don't mean to interrupt you here, but what happened in the 1940s in Canada, we had the internment camps for Japanese. I forget the number. It was, I think, around 200,000. And this was wrong. And it was wrong to the point where we had the prime minister in the 80s apologize. And then also you had the president also in the 80s apologize for the same thing. You're basically giving them a sentence based on their nationality, not on what they did, but it's the government on their homeland, what they did. That's not right. You know, why would you do this to Ovechkin? I don't give a shit about Ovechkin, to be perfectly honest. I don't follow hockey, but why force him to give up a passport? This is, why have Medvedev not enter into Wimbledon because he's Russian? Why? Like, this doesn't make sense to me. Didn't they exclude the Russian juniors from participating in a world junior hockey tournament just because of the fact they're Russians? I mean, these are kids. Why are you taking away their dreams just because the leader of their homeland is an idiot? That doesn't make sense.
I know. It's difficult. Bitcoin, I think for me, I look at the way that this stuff is starting to take shape, and I have never been more convinced that I think even if you don't believe that it's got, you know, a higher than 50% chance of making it, right, quote unquote, making it, it is so difficult now to make a compelling case that you just shouldn't own any. You're watching the stock market like fluctuate on no news, 3% moves, 4% moves, and then, you know, back in the other direction. Like today you had, you know, I think most of the day the market was down 1 or 2 points and finished up 1 or 2 points. That's not natural movement. It may seem natural because that's what we've gotten since the COVID shutdown, but that's not natural market movement. And then I think as well, like the LME continues to kind of bewilder. They're halting futures derivatives on gold and silver, right? Like this is like, it's Banana Republic clown world type stuff is what it is. And I, you know, again, another great tweet that I'm stealing from someone, or a great comment as far as like cancel culture, not letting people participate over certain things, blah, blah, blah. Like Len, if you and me want to play in the NBA, we can't just cancel LeBron, cancel Kevin Durant, cancel Steph Curry, and cancel everyone else until we're the only thing left in town. It doesn't work that way. And it shouldn't work that way in any professional sphere, intellectual sphere, academic sphere, like whatever. But it seems to me that there's a large chunk of the population, including some politicians, world leaders, business leaders, influencers who want this. And I just don't understand why. I do understand why, but what I don't understand is how people can be less than furious about it. And, you know, thinking about, you know, just the way that we handled that that story from the story from the Bank of Canada, for example, right, which was like an intentional misdirection last week, like how fired up it got both of us. Maybe just me, but I'm going to include you in there, too, just in case we get in shit down the road. So, you know, how fired up that got us. I think like, you know, yeah, we're fired up and we're joking about how we're really fired up. But shouldn't everyone be this fired up about this stuff? Shouldn't everyone have this concern? You know, you got a young daughter. I don't have any kids, but like hopefully, and I know a lot of you guys listening, watching have kids and families and stuff. Like, shouldn't we all be upset about this? I think even to something as sort of mundane and memeable as YouTube getting rid of the dislike totals on videos. Like, shouldn't we be upset about that? We all sort of accept that the Twitter town hall thing is very important and that everyone should have a voice on Twitter because it's become this de facto free speech. It's the exclusive option basically to reach as many people. And so we all understand why that's important, but then we weren't really that upset about the YouTube taking down the dislike totals on videos. We haven't really been that upset about, like, in my view anyway, like in Canada, the state sponsorship of basically every major media outlet, all the newspapers, CBC. CBC takes like 73% of its revenue from government subsidy. Like that's not a business. That's a propaganda operation. I hate to say it, but like, how can you view this any other way? Either you play ball with where the money comes from, or we'll find someone who will. That's not a relationship the media should have with a backer, or that the media should have with the people that it's informing. And I see stuff like the Digital Services Act, and I think, you know, this is just it's another potential sort of nail in the coffin, so to speak, of free speech, free expression, free money. And just free digital citizenship. We're all digital citizens of the world, mm-hmm. Right? And you know, and we're not really being treated that way. We're starting to be penned up a little bit here, and it should be concerning to people. Really should.
Do you want to make a bet that the United States is going to impose some sort of law that's similar to this, that's going to specifically target Twitter? Especially what's transpired today, I could see that happening.
Jen Psaki today got a question from someone in the press gallery about whether or not. Well, she was asked whether or not Biden was concerned about the Musk acquisition. She said she doesn't comment on specific transactions, but the Biden administration has been looking to do some sweeping legislative changes to what platforms are allowed to publish and all this stuff. Basically, not leaving it to the platform to make the decision. Mm-hmm. I think, you know. That's really weird timing. Again, I feel like I'm wearing a tinfoil hat sometimes when we get on this show, Len, but like really weird timing that now you're really concerned as midterms are starting to creep up. You know, and I tweeted today as well, and we'll leave it here. Like, I don't want to go too far on this, but like I tweeted today as well on that Musk acquisition. I said, there is no amount of money that you could put down on a Republican win in the midterms and a Republican win in 2024, that would be too much. They're going to clean house, because now if Twitter is no longer a mouthpiece for the Democratic Party in the United States, they're fucked. They can't win an election this way. We saw this with the Hunter Biden thing. We saw this with all the fake Trump stories. You know, I think back to 2016 when times were a little lighter and it was just all about memes and you know, crying harder and things of that nature. The number of times that, you know, people were completely blindsided and the news was running with insane stories about Trump peeing on Russian prostitutes and there was videotapes of all this stuff. It was all a lie. It was all
No. We want closure to this story. I'm not sure exactly what's transpired. It was pissing on the beds and everything. We want to see what happened.
The thing is, there was no concern from the liberal media then about checking the things that are on going onto content platforms. PolitiFact, for example, you know, I think a operation run by Media Matters, maybe another sort of Democratic arm's length organization. There was no concern about any of this, right? Now there's tons of concern. And in the chat, I'm not going to say what people are talking about because that'll for sure get our fucking channel nerfed. But you know, you can decide what, you know, you've heard a lot about the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial, but there's another trial recently that was probably bigger news. And we didn't hear much about that. Short of a few, you know, blurry drawings, basically we didn't hear much at all. But I know how much wine Johnny Depp likes to drink on a Tuesday night. You know, that should tell you a lot about the press that you're dealing with and the importance of transparent, you know, a transparent digital sphere, a transparent online sphere that we just at the moment don't have. And I'm concerned. I am concerned that it's going to get a lot worse. You're right.
Bread and circuses. That's what's prevalent. Got one more story. Well, I'm going to rip through it really quick because we don't have too much time here. It's a story I have about the IMF, and they're acknowledging that things are screwed up. And we have the IMF director, Kristalina Georgieva. I hope I pronounced her name correctly. She's come clean in a latest recording, which was included her in a panel. If you want, I could share with you the tweet here, and you could play the video because it's actually quite damning. I'm not sure if you got to see it, Joey. But
I did see it. Do you want to play the clip? Can we play this? Are we like in copyright territory here? Or are you going to send it to me to share? Or are you going to share it?
No, you share it. I'll put it on the chat. Okay. So everyone can see it. But if you want to just pull it up and share it, because it's really interesting to see how she frames this. And I'm not.
I can't copy that. That URL. Can you send it to me in the private chat? This is really good audio content.
Quality stuff. Like, here we go. It's just shared it with you. So, see, we're trying to feel our way through the process, ladies and gentlemen. So, obviously, we're not pros at this. Even though we're a year into it, we're still wet behind the ears in many regards.
Okay, how's that? It's good. I got it. Let me pull it up. Let me share a tab. Oh, my God. It wants to.
Okay.
I must update Chrome again. But anyway.
Okay, we'll skip that. So essentially, she went on to say that they printed too much money. I mean, this is the director from the IMF, so she's got some clout here, and she's in a position of authority. And she was talking about how they printed too much money without thinking what would be the end result of their action. And she said, and I'm quoting this one, out of time.
I got it. Here we go. Ready?
Go ahead.
Let's see if it plays. I hope it plays the sound. Never occurred to me that it might not play the sound. Let's see.
Yeah.
Madam MD.
I think we are not paying sufficient attention to the law of unintended consequences. We take decisions with an objective in mind and rarely think through what may happen that is not our objective. And then we wrestle with the impact of it. Take any decision that is a massive decision, like the decision that we need to spend to support the economy. You know, at that time, we did recognize that may lead to too much money in circulation, too few goods. But didn't really quite think through the consequence in a way that upfront would have informed better what we do. And I subscribe entirely to what Christine said about climate shocks. We
climate shocks. Oh my God.
Already out of time. And the fact that whenever something hits us, we forget about this other crisis is incredibly troubling. The fact that we are, I'm sorry I'm going on here, but I'll finish in a second. We act sometimes like 8 years old playing soccer. Here is the ball, we are all at the ball, and we don't cover the rest of the field.
And she's bang on. So the two things that are striking to me, the one is she's using the words out of time. That's telling. Another thing that's being, I want to note here, is she uses the word soccer instead of football. Like, this might be something small, but
here we go. Wait, can we go deep on that? How deep can we go on soccer?
I'd love to know who is the intended audience here. Is this something, are she trying to target Americans? Because everywhere else in the world, aside from North America, calls it football. So I'm wondering if she's purposely putting out this statement here to target the American audience. That I don't know. But I have to say that I'm very, very interested in the fact that she was very candid with her thoughts. I didn't expect this from her. I didn't expect this from anybody in that position. But it goes to show you that they're at a point now they cannot hide the fact that they screwed up because what they've done and the consequences of their actions and adding all this new money to the economy. Of course, it's going to have the negative impact of reducing your purchasing power. And the fact that she's saying that she's out of time, I think that there's realization that there's potentially more countries out there that are on the brink of being defaulting on their debt. And it's going to cause a real domino effect that's going to fall. It seems like she truly understands that there's nothing left in the tank here. If you have a few more countries that cannot pay their bills, who's going to pick up the tabs here? The Western nations, they can only do so for so long, but they're already dealing with the heavy debts that they're dealing with right now. You can't just restructure debts from Argentina or from Lebanon or whatever and have them repay it. You're going to have to take pennies on a dollar. And ultimately, somebody's going to have to pay the piper here, and it's most likely going to be the Western nations that is propping up the IMF. We are in some real problems here. Listen to what she's talking. She is talking from the heart. She's making sense. I'm actually, it's incredible the fact that she's giving out this information. And I think that we are truly screwed. It's not going to be a matter of if, it's a matter of when. We just need a few more countries that have a sizable economy that go belly up. And that is going to have drastic effects for everybody. Watch out.
This is like a great clip, man. That's a real honker. I've seen that clip a few times. I only have like three things written in my notes here. The best part of the comment is that everyone knows it's true, right? Everyone knows that this is a true thing. The second best part is Lagarde's face as the IMF director is unmasking the policy error. Sir, can I show you the face of a woman who knows she's going to have to fire somebody on Monday morning? This is what it looks like. When someone is about to get fired on Monday morning.
Are you aware that Christine Lagarde doesn't pay any taxes on her income? Are you aware of that? So if you work for the IMF, for the World Bank, for the whatever Christine's position is, she's the central banker for the European Union. Yeah. No taxes. Their income is tax-free.
It's amazing, isn't it? That people who are legislating that you must pay more taxes because the temperature is too high are skating on every dollar they earn.
Incredible. All the people that work for the BIS, for IMF, World Bank, they're all tax-free, the income that they're making. That is incredible.
It's all tax-free.
A good chunk that's tax-free of the people. Like, that's just incredible.
Who's
paying it? It's you and I is paying it. Everybody in this chat is paying it.
Look, Lagarde is a favorite of the program. Okay, you used to have back when we were really shooting from the hip a lot more. Although it feels like we're shooting from the hip a lot the last few weeks too. You're digging up a picture of Christine right now that you keep beside your bed there. Yeah, that must be nice. I've met your wife a few times. She seems like a nice woman. I guarantee that if I had a picture of a woman beside my bed and I was married to you, okay, and I knew that you had a picture of a woman beside your bed. That's really the photo that I would be the least worried about, I think, right? It's got to be up there on the list, doesn't it? You're on mute.
Sorry, how about Liz Warren? That's another one.
Oh, Lizzie. Yeah. I mean, you picked two good ones there. That's, you know, Hillary? That's not going to cause you any grief in your marriage for sure. So
Hillary,
like Lagarde has a special, like, you know, a certain charm to her, where she says things that everyone knows are crazy. She, I think, also probably knows they're crazy, but says them anyway with a straight face. You know, she's really been playing the hits on some of these, like, media appearances. Don't forget, okay, this is the same woman who said in 2019, people are happier to have a job than to have their savings protected. You know, press X to doubt on that. And then in 2015, financial repression is the most successful in liquidating debt when it is accompanied by inflation.
That's pretty damning.
That's pretty damning for people like in the chat. You guys are saying that
she was a convicted. Yeah, and this is true.
She's been convicted of financial crimes. And some of you are also saying Narwhal again, talking about how they want you to believe the consequences were unintended. I don't believe it. I don't believe it. No one should believe it. We'll leave it with this, Len. Every week now, it seems like we're playing stupid or liar with some of these people in power. And so what do you think? Is Christine and her director there, former director now, probably, I can't imagine this person is still employed after that face. But like, are they really that uninformed, or are they lying to us? What do you think? They're lying. Everyone's a liar. Everyone is a liar. It's unbelievable. It's all over the modern world. No, we didn't know there would be inflation. It was only a couple trill between friends. You know, Len, a couple trillion here, a couple trillion there. Pretty soon you're talking about real money. And now they're dealing with real consequences from all that spending. So good luck. Buy Bitcoin, man, because, you know, Christine Lagarde also famously says that Bitcoin is an escape hatch for people. That's sort of the point, Christine. Open invite to the show, of course, anytime you want to come on.
Discuss these things. Yeah.
Absolutely. Happy to have you. But until then, we're just going to keep calling you nuts.
You know, they'll soon talk about quadrillion, right? Like, you know, if we keep pumping our trillions like this, we're going to eventually run out of trillions and go to quadrillion. And then we're talking that we now have as much money in circulation as there are Shiba Inu coins. And now,
do you listen to anything with Harris Kupperman? Cuppy?
No.
So on another good Canadian podcast that's, you know, very much anti-Bitcoin, but I still listen to it anyway, The Market Huddle. Kevin Muir and Patrick Stresna have guests on every so often. And one of their frequent guests is Cuppy, Harris Kupperman. And he, a year and a half ago or 2 years ago when this started, basically started investing on this thesis that he was calling Project Zimbabwe. And the thesis was that North American markets are going to inflate to trillions more in value because they have nowhere to go but up with all this money coming into the system. And eventually the money's not going to be worth anything. And everyone's just going to be rich on paper and poor in real life. And how, like, not only is that a great name, Project Zimbabwe, fantastic, but how right was he? He was spot on. Everyone is richer than they've ever been. You keep on seeing these reports all over the place. And then, you know, on the next page, you know, on the B side, the community section of the paper, what do you see? No one can afford a house. Tent cities are growing. Distrust in government is growing. Inflation is at all-time highs. But on paper, ooh, we got more savings than ever. The savings rate is you know, lower, but the number's higher. Well, great. It is Project Zimbabwe out there, man. And I think these guys know it. I think you and me know it. The listeners and viewers know it. And fortunately for us, buddy, I think we know the best way to defend against that. It's Bitcoin. And definitely not gold. Definitely not sub $1,900 per ounce gold during a fucking hot war on the European continent. Gold. It's Bitcoin, and people are going to start figuring it out slowly but surely.
You sound like that BMO commercial where it sounds like you're richer than you think. So, yeah. But one thing you failed to mention is all those payday loan places.
Yeah.
Those are big too. It's a different world than we're living in now than we were just a few years ago. And it's
like, okay, a sort of anecdotal measure. How many more dispensaries and payday loan places have popped up in your neighborhood in the last 5 years?
To be perfectly honest, none.
Like I go, like if I go to the mall in Hamilton, like Limeridge, I got to drive by a number of these sort of like side of the road strip mall kind of
things. Is that on the mountain, Limeridge?
Yeah. It's right off Upper Wentworth. If I go there, like I got to go there Friday to get a shirt for this wedding. And there's going to be more dispensaries popping up in these little strip malls and more payday loan places popping up. And it's just like, this is not what a healthy economy looks like. It's just not. It's not what a healthy society looks like. And you could, you know, whatever, rake me over the coals. Well, don't worry about if whether or not I smoke dope or chew gummies. Like, it's fine. I'm just saying we don't need them popping up on every street corner. This is indicative of a population that needs support in a way that they're not getting it at the moment. And I you know, this stuff, I don't see any stories about that in CTV or CP24 or CBC. Rosie Barton's not vowing to go deep on the support Canadians need, right? She's vowing to leave the platform in tears if Elon buys it. Like, it's something, Len. And that something ain't good.
Why aren't you wearing a ShakePay shirt to the wedding? Why are you getting a new brand new shirt? You have a perfectly good ShakePay shirt.
ShakePay is a great sponsor. I forgot to do the read at the beginning of the show because I was distracted by my 9-to-5 job. So I'll have to put that in after the fact. But
do it now.
They've been a great sponsor. I'm actually wearing the.
There you go. See?
Yeah, I have the shirt on today. So I went to physio. No one's always buy, never sell. Yet, but. Yeah, always buy, never sell.
You could shake your phone.
We're not doing it now because then it's going to be at the beginning of the show and in the middle too. So
not on a video. The video.
We'll add it after.
All right. that's it for the A block and the rest of the. Well, we'll do the Canadian news first. The CPI for March came out, and So did you know what the number is, Joey? We were at 5.7% in the month of February. So for March, any idea what you think it is?
I saw the story running on a TV at the gym last week, but I don't know what it was. Is it, you said 5. What for March?
5.7 for the month of February. So March.
Give me 6.1.
Ooh, no, it's way low. It's 6.7. We went up a full percent in that 1 month.
6.7.
6.7. This is the largest increase since January 1991, where we were at 6.9%.
Nice.
I think next month we're probably going to go a little bit further back. It's not going to exceed 6.7, just my guess, because the price of fuel has gone down since the highs in March. But as we go forward into the rest of the spring and into summer, I suspect we're going to crush the 6.7% and even a 6.9% we experienced back in January 1991. Well, they are raising rates. So they raised the rates 50 basis points just last week. And I suspect they're going to probably do the same to try to rein in inflation moving forward. I don't know what else to say. 6.7 is a pretty high number. It's probably, I said it's probably going to go back a little bit, but then it's going to continually move up. So don't be happy if it goes down a little bit. Don't these central bankers and politicians, they shouldn't start celebrating just yet. Let's look at this in 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, and beyond that. Then we'll have a true indication where we are moving with this with the CPI. And I don't think it's going to be going down anytime soon for like an over-sustained period of time. It's going to be sustained or going higher. That's just my guess.
I like what we're going to start seeing soon is that the year-over-year numbers are going to start to stabilize a bit because we've been in this environment for a long time. And there's going to be celebrations from the fiat bros about how the inflation regime is under control. We're starting to see decreases, like you said, in the month over month numbers, and the delta is all that matters, bullshit like this. And then again, man, like I'm shaking my head on this show yet again this week, because a lot of people are they're unable to parse the difference between something that they've done to cause themselves some grief financially and something that government policy has done to cause them some grief. And, you know, without getting into the sort of nitty gritty about the COVID response and whether or not you think it was required or too deep or too wide or whatever, I would just say that there's a lot of money given away without a lot of controls in place. And I believe, Len, that there is a campaign underway at the moment by, I think, some NDP politicians, maybe also some Liberal politicians, that they want the mistakes to remain in the pockets of Canadians, right? And the taxable sort of payments that they should be making back to the federal government to be kept, I take it, by the recipients. This is it's a recipe for inflation. One thing we haven't seen in this country yet that will for sure continue this flywheel, and it'll happen in the States too, is wage inflation. If you think inflation is bad now, wait until every truck driver at Walmart's making $110,000 a year. If you think inflation is bad now, wait till every server, cook, retail greeter is making, you know, $20 an hour, $25 an hour. The spending and the wealth effect are related. And when you start putting more money in people's pockets, they're going to spend more and it's going to cause it to go up even more. And you wind up in this flywheel. And we're not quite there yet, but it's going to come because wage inflation almost always follows price inflation. So I don't know. What's your guess for next month? What do you think? Are we getting into the like 7.1, 7.2?
No, I think it's going to go back maybe 6.5, 6.4. Just because the price of fuel is going to be much lower in a month of
it's down. It's down now. It's down now. But
yeah,
like I don't think, you know, from the perspective of like demand and the sort of uncertainty overseas, it's not going to stay down.
It's no. It's a 1 month thing. It's once we get over this dealing with a lower cost of fuel. I mean, this is just very temporary. Then we're going to go back to, you know, the shipping problems that are happening in Shanghai.
Right.
This is going to have a problem because, I mean, when you can't ship stuff over from China to here, what the hell is going to happen? Whatever you have here, the prices are going to go way up. So it's, you want to order stuff from Amazon? Well, you know, who knows if the Amazon warehouses here are going to be stock moving forward. It's going to be a real problem. Take a look to see the satellite. It's like a picture,
the radar of the boats off the off the coast.
It's stacked. It's like the 401 during rush hour, just full, and it's not moving because there's an accident up there taking up four lanes, and so you just gotta wait for them to clear it out. It's gonna take months to clear up this backlog, and these are ships waiting to be docked into Shanghai to get loaded up to come back here. So even when they start clearing the backlog, it's still a time delay before the ships are on route to North America, and then it's got to be offloaded here, put on freight, and then moved. So it's a long process.
That's right.
We're in for a real problem. Problem,
man. I totally agree. I think there's a lot of stuff going on now that, you know, again, like I don't want to go with tin foil, but you look at like the lockdowns over there, and is it really, you know, do you really have to lock down the most important parts of the Chinese economy to? And Narwhal's in the chat saying the same thing. Like, you know, do you really have to do that? Or are you doing it for some other reason that's not so, you know, not so on the up and up with police in English written on the back of the Tyvek suit, right? Never forget about that. So make of that what you will. Let's try not to get banned. What else you got?
So Canada is testing there's demand for investors for a 3-year bond in US dollars that's coming out of Canada. We talked about this briefly on Tom and Nick's show last week. And the last time this was done was back in 2019. So this is not unprecedented, but these are 3-year bonds and it's going to be in US dollars, which is interesting. And what I find interesting about this is this a result of people not wanting to have Canadian dollars? They want to have more US dollars or exposure to that. I'm wondering what's the rationale for this. This is really outside my wheelhouse here. But the fact that I read this, it kind of made me it was kind of interesting to see what's happening here, because we haven't done this for at least 3 years, and you're selling US dollar bonds in Canada. That's pretty strange to me. I don't know what to think of this.
US dollar exposure is I think the end game, right? For the customers of this bond. If that's the case, then, you know, it tells you how much faith the Canadian investor has in the Canadian dollar at the moment. Well, we've said on the show many times too, that for all the policy levers that the, you know, Bank of Canada likes to pull, the rates and you know, fiscal response and things of that nature, the fact of the matter is we're always kind of playing second fiddle to whatever the US does. So I think that shows that there's some concern about the strength of the Canadian dollar going forward. I don't know why, if there was demand in 2019, there hasn't been demand. Like the 3-year bonds, I guess, are expiring. Is that it? They didn't just release them every year. They released one tranche and now they're expiring. It sounds like the 3-year term is up or what?
I'm wondering if what happened in March 2020 kind of sideswiped any of their plans to do any of this. Is if we didn't have that shutdown then, would they have continually done this on an annual basis? I don't know. This is something, again, it's way out of my wheelhouse. I have no clue. But the fact that it's, you know, we're getting exposure to US dollars, that's, I don't know. That's, do we not like the Canadian dollar?
It's strange. It's strange.
Radioactive or something? Yeah, it definitely is.
I don't know. I'm not going to buy any of that stuff. I'm not a bond guy because I have, you know, other things I'd rather park my money. And if I want to piss money away, I'll just set it on fire or something. It's prettier than buying a bond. So I'll not be purchasing any of those. But if you do, or if any of you listening or watching do, let me know. I'd be curious to see what the rationale is.
Yeah, snowball's chance of me buying one of those. A report came out, and there's a lot of talk about homes. There's a shortage of homes, and this is causing a problem with prices going up. Well, it looks like the 20% of Canadian MPs hold rental investment real estate, which is kind of funny because they're the ones that are creating the laws and trying to stem the problem of higher home prices. And, well, 20% of them are holding more than one piece of property. Pretty interesting to me. And this isn't in totality, though, because there's still 91 MPs who have not yet disclosed their public holdings right now. And this is also including one MP, Talib Nur Mohammed. And he was previously criticized for flipping dozens of properties in the past. He made millions of dollars as a result of this. So good for him for doing so. And the biggest person that's holding the most properties is a guy named Marty Morantz. Never heard of him. He holds 21 properties. 21.
Not bad.
Good for him. But you know what? If they're talking about there's a shortage of homes, just go look in the mirror. And Marty, you should look in the mirror. We'll see, because, you know, 21 properties is kind of excessive for me. I don't know what to take for this. I know homes are a good place to store your money because, you know, historically they go up. It's a great place to do it. But really, like, if they're going to say that there's a shortage and yet your guy's holding a good chunk, like, you know, 20% at least plus, that you have more than one property, I don't know. And I don't buy it. You know what I mean? Like, come on, man. Look in the mirror and give us the truth, because I don't buy this shit.
They're not going to pass legislation that's going to negatively affect their bottom line. So if that number is higher than 20%, you said, right? If it's higher than 20% and it's like, you know, 50, I think it is higher than 20%. Like, it's almost got to be higher than 20%. I don't expect legislation like this to pass. They'll be very public about their desire to do such a thing, and then you know, try and paint their colleagues as you know, slumlords or something for having more than one piece of property. Slumlord, by the way, great, like, outstanding term, great term for people who own rentals, take risks, and provide housing to people who otherwise would be on the street. How dare we, as a society, allow that term to continue being used?
I have a memory like an elephant, Joey. And didn't you have an old landlord that had email address?
Like that? I did. My third year at Brock, this guy Bill. I won't say his last name, but his email was slumlord73, I think, or slumlord74@hotmail.com. And I told my dad that, and he's like, you found a guy who goes by slumlord to be your landlord for the year? Like, wait, you really know how to pick him? And I remember we were asking him how to spell his last name for the checks, me and my buddy Kyle. And he's like, ah, don't worry about how you spell it. They'll take the checks. Just do your best. Why don't you just tell me how to spell your last name, man?
Fucking joke. Instead of
telling me, just wing it. Like, anyway, Slumlord Bill, if you're out there listening, buddy, I hope you're doing all right. I know he, little meta for you here from my past. I wasn't always as calm, cool, collected as I am now. The last day of that third year, I invited two nice young ladies up to party with me and my couple of roommates, and was talking quite loudly in the kitchen, probably after a few drinks, about how we were going to have this huge bash and torch the place. And he was in the living room on the other side of the wall, and I didn't know he had come in. And he ended up calling my dad about it. He's like, I want you to get him under control, because he's already drinking and his buddies are already drinking, and they're talking, we're having a party up there. So that was another unpleasant conversation I had on the phone. Anyway, the moral of the story is that, you know, the odds that these guys pass legislation that materially affects the way that they're able to do business in their personal life is almost nothing, I think. And if they do pass it, you can be sure that there's loopholes in place that allow them to continue to own other homes, do rentals, do flipping, stuff like that. You know, not to go back to Tom and Nick again, but on their show, and I believe this, my father's been a landlord and continues to be a landlord for a number of different properties. I would just say that there's a lot of risk involved, a lot of time involved, a lot of, late nights, phone calls, all this stuff to try and make the experience pleasant for tenants. And, that risk really needs to be rewarded. That's how capitalism works. That's how markets work. You're rewarded for the risk you take and the skills you bring to the table. It's not fair to characterize these people, this MP that's flipping houses. It's not fair to characterize him as a bad guy. Anyone can do that. It just so happens that he took the risk and, made good on it by the sounds of it. So good for him.
I think the true moral of the story here, if you're going to be crashing places, Joy, you should make sure you're communicating by signal or some other secured method of communication. Don't just blab it out in a room so anybody could hear, because that's one way for your slumlord landlord to get wind of it.
Unbelievable, man. Unbelievable. Yeah. I honestly can't believe I made it through university unscathed. I really should have been like,
just others would say you
dead or something.
Yeah. Others would argue you didn't. So, I want to bring up a recent poll that came out from Nanos. I don't tend to do this very often, but there's some interesting data that came out. It just came out just last week. And Joey, the top 10 issues, they've listed them here. What would you think would be the top, say, two or three? I'm curious if you would be in line with the people that are being polled here.
Top issues of Archie and Veronica, top issues of Sports Illustrated. What are you talking about?
Oh, the top issues of Canadians. I'll give you one hint here. It's definitely nothing to do with a particular virus that's floating around. That is quite low on the list.
That's not surprising. I would say number one is got to be either inflation or some adjacent topic that people who maybe can't articulate inflation well would say, like the cost of living or something like that. Yeah.
So that's tied for two. Yeah. So number one, and you could almost say this is very much directly tied to that one, is jobs and the economy.
Right.
So jobs, economy, healthcare, and inflation, they're so close to each other. You could say they're all tied for number one. What that shows me is that people are feeling the pinch here. If jobs and the economy and inflation are two of the three of the top issues right now, people are feeling it. And this number is right now pulling around 11%. It's probably going to go much, much higher. That germ thing that I talked about earlier, it's now at 7th at 4.3%. It's really, really low. So yeah, it just goes to show you that everybody is now feeling it. And it's really going to be more prevalent as we go forward, especially as we move into summer when people want to drive more and the price of filling up your car is going to be more expensive than it was in previous years. It's that people are really going to start feeling the pinch here. And one last thing I just want to say, shelves. As grocery shelves get depleted with goods, this is people are going to like just shrug their shoulders and say, what the fuck? Because if you can't buy food, it doesn't matter if you have money in your pocket. If you can't buy it, it's meaningless. And this is going to be we'll be crossing a line in the sand that that's going to be a real problem once we get there.
Yeah, I think demand is going to ramp up as we head into summertime. It always does, right? You mentioned this before. Summer's driving season. It's consumption season. It's it's the time of year when discretionary spending goes up, or at least wants to go up. The pressure is upward and not the other way. So, the surveys to me are kind of an interesting anecdotal tool, right? Like what is the question that leads people to say that jobs and the economy is number one, but COVID is number seven? Because it seems to me that a lot of people would put that higher. And so I'm just wondering how they frame that question. What's the thing that affects you most in your daily life, maybe, or something like that? What's the issue that you think about the most when you wake up in the morning? I still think about, COVID, but the issues that affect me day to day, it's not in the top 10, not anymore. So I wonder how they frame that question. I would guess that there's some guidance in the way that question
would work. You think that they're being led by the questioning?
A little bit, probably.
Potentially. But these guys, this is their game. The Nanos, this is their bread and butter. I would hope they don't do that, because then their reputation would be tarnished as a result of that. I
either think or they'll get to run the next big Bank of Canada survey, one or the other.
Yeah, yeah, and we'll figure out, again, we're still all idiots and financially illiterate. So we talked to Steve Barber last week, was it?
2 weeks, I think, right?
2 weeks ago. So yeah, it was 2 weeks ago. And he actually went on a tangent just this week. And it was a topic we talked about on the show. I just want to articulate a little bit further. And so there's going to be, right now in Alberta, they're going to be asking for companies to start paying royalties on the gas that's being used for fueling Bitcoin mining operations. And the stuff that's just simply being flared and just, you know, vented into the atmosphere, well, that's not going to be subjected to the royalties, and there's going to be no charge for that. So what is odd here is when you're using the gas to power a generator to mine Bitcoin, you're doing a service to the environment because you're converting the methane into combustible, and it's much better than simply burning it off or just releasing and venting it outright. So because when you burn it, there's still going to be a hint of methane still left and burn in the air. But when you combust it, it doesn't really happen. So they're punishing these Bitcoin miners and having them pay higher fees by simply doing a service to the environment. To me, it doesn't make sense. But is this something that looks like it's going down in Alberta? It's the wrong message. It's the wrong thing we should be doing. We should be doing something to try to make it more economically feasible to make it combustible, so it's better for the environment. Let's try to remove these barriers. Didn't we have Jason Kenney talk about making Alberta the crypto capital of Canada or whatever? Like, what is this? This is kind of, it's counterintuitive here. Like, we don't need this bullshit. We have to lift the barriers. We don't need this. Let's let these companies combust the gas. Let them do what they got to do. Don't ask them to pay any additional money. To me, it just doesn't make sense.
This is why when Marty and Steve did this on our show too, talk about why you shouldn't allow the framing to move toward the desires of policymakers. This is what they mean. This is exactly what they mean. Royalties on something that you didn't have to pay any royalties on before, they would have rather you just burned and blasted into the atmosphere. Now, suddenly, because it's benefiting you in a way that they don't like, there's a new tax. Brand new. It's going to be legislated in nationwide, and we're not going to be the only people that do this. By the way, it's going to come from a lot of places. And to your point about Kenny, hey man, how many politicians have, you and I, you know, lifted up and then, torn down just as quickly the next week or 2 weeks later, right? It happens there pretty frequently on the CBP. And I think that Kenny, you know, he may be another candidate, unfortunately, for the, you know, heroes slain, wall of fame. Let's see, but not a great start, that's for sure. And Kenny probably drives, or at least has a hand in a lot of that policy, because he's the you know, oil and gas premier. But we'll see, Len. Steve is right, Marty is right. I think we're right about this, and I hope people start paying attention. It's a big time attack vector. It doesn't get, you know, it gets a lot of press, but it still doesn't get the press it deserves, honestly, in my opinion.
I think we should get the Eric Adams Award going and just start handing this out on a monthly basis, because there's enough of these people that can get this award. And the name is fitting, given the fact that Eric Adams was a big proponent of Bitcoin. And then as soon as he gets in power, the mining is shit. That's not even.
Well, like the thing is that these guys, like, they don't know anything, right? That's really the problem, I think. And they pronounce, that they want Bitcoin to be successful. They want mining to be successful. They want all this stuff to work. And then when it comes time to legislate in favor of it, they don't. It's either they don't because they're like ignorant to the whole purpose, like the mechanism of mining, for example, or because they never intended to, right? They get into power. And once you're in power, you know, the leverage that you have as a voter, let's say, really disappears for 3 years or 4 years, right? Especially at the provincial level. So, you know, Len, we are doing a lot of teardowns of politicians. I expect that to accelerate, honestly. We were pretty positive, I think, in the beginning of the show, because a lot of people were talking about Bitcoin in a way that we felt was pretty good. But my spider sense is always on edge now when people start talking about Bitcoin. Great examples here every week from the research team at the CBP.
You know what? Just through this episode, I'm getting more and more negative. Not even just from the beginning of the podcast, just simply from the beginning of it. But I want to give kudos to this next story, Ethan Liu. We had
friend
him
of the show.
We had him on the show last year. I can't remember exactly when, maybe October. But nonetheless, he was reporting on a House Finance Committee today. And present for that was Governor Tiff Macklem. And also, give me a second here. It was Carolyn Rogers. She's the deputy governor from Bank of Canada. And Ms. Rogers was saying that the Bank of Canada doesn't see cryptocurrency as a way of opting out of inflation the way Pierre Poilievre is saying. But what I find interesting here, and I appreciate Ethan Liu for providing us this information, not just us, he posted this on Twitter, so everybody gets this information. He says that the central bank digital currency has moved from to development stage after the research phase. This is nuts that we've moved to the development stage. I think that I don't want to say it's imminent, but I've been saying it for a while now that we're probably going to see something along the lines of a pilot project in the next 2 years. If they're right now in development, like, come on, like the wheels are moving and they're moving quite fast. What does this mean? Well, potentially less privacy for you. I've been saying that having a programmable currency that is centrally administered is not the right thing to do. But it's likely something that's going to be coming and you can't stop it because countries around the world are doing it and Canada is no different. So be very careful about this. I've been saying this is coming. Ultimately, it will be the federal government's decision to roll it out. But if the central bank has figured out how to do it, why wouldn't this federal government roll it out? I think it's advantageous for them to do so, but it's at a cost. And I think it's at a cost of privacy. And that's something that's scary.
It might be time to bring Ethan back on the show. He's been doing a lot of good work in the space the last, you know, probably longer than I realized, but he wrote that piece that was popular in the chat last week here. It's time to start considering Bitcoin apart from other cryptocurrencies. He's doing some good coverage of finance committee, CBDC stuff. And also, unlike a lot of his peers in the media, has a pretty deep understanding of Bitcoin, Ethereum, how they work, the differences, things like that, because he spent time in Bitcoin in the early days. So maybe time to bring him back on. As far as the CBDC thing, I'm with you, man. You know that. I think it's coming. I know there's a lot of people on Twitter who say that it's redundant and, you know, kind of it's an academic theory more than it's a shippable product. But I disagree. I think it's going to be here very soon. Inside of 2 years would be my guess.
Mexico is introducing it and they're a huge trading partner of Canada. So if they're doing it, why not us? It doesn't seem like it's a far-fetched idea. But that's it for the Canadian side. We'll talk about the rest of the news. I got a few stories I want to bring up. Number one, I wanted to put this on the Canadian side, but it's not Canadian enough. It's kind of hard for me to say that. But the first Bitcoin ETF is going to be listed on the Australian Securities Exchange. And they're going about this a very unique way of having a spot Bitcoin ETF put in place. They're actually just investing into the purpose Bitcoin ETF that's in Canada. So they're not administering anything. You're just buying into the purpose. The BTCC, I think, is the ticker in Canada. Really cool way of doing it. But it's probably going to put more pressure on purpose to make sure that they're managing their keys, because that's going to be a lot of money that's going to be flowing in from Australia into this one particular fund. But having another spotty Bitcoin ETF, I think it goes live this week. It makes there's more demand for Bitcoin. So all in all, it's a good thing. I thought it was really interesting the way that they're going about doing this, not launching their own, but just kind of piggybacking off purpose. Cool stuff. And it's got a Canadian side to it, but it wasn't Canadian enough for me to put it into Canadian stories. So, but
that's all right. I like that. That's innovation. When's the U.S. going to do that? Are they able to do that? Or are they still waiting for approvals from Gary and the boys?
Well, they approved another futures ETF.
Great.
Tokrium, I think, is the name of that ETF, but it's another futures ETF that was approved. But that one is a little bit different. I don't know too much about that because they actually were approved under two different sections of the Securities Act or something. It's rather complicated. But the fact that they got this approved under those types of sections of the Act, they're saying that this might open a door for a spot ETF, but I can't give you much more insight than that because it's a little bit beyond me at this stage. So that's just a topic for another time. But what isn't a topic for another time is the New York State Assembly. They are going to be voting on a proposed ban and a proof of work. And this is going to happen today. I took a look just a few minutes ago. It looks like it hasn't yet gone through. Really what this is, they don't want any Bitcoin miners to operate within the state if they are not using 100% green / renewables energy. So I took a look this past weekend to see which publicly traded miners might be impacted Greenidge, G-R-E-E, is the ticker. They do operate within the state of New York, so they would be impacted because they use natural gas at a power plant to mine their Bitcoin. So this isn't 100% green energy. So I suspect Greenidge is going to have a setback as a result of this if this is going to come into fruition. So right now it hasn't yet been finalized and you know, given the royal assent to the American version, but it's not looking good. So it looks like this ultimately will go through. So there's going to be a ban in New York for Bitcoin mining for proof of work. So that's pretty sad stuff.
Define green, like Marty says. Give me a definition for green, and then we'll talk about whether or not I'm going to play ball. And that helps prevent moving the goalposts as well. But Len, they're not interested in honest acting. They're not interested in defining things. They're not interested in playing fair, playing by the rules, and you know, setting reasonable targets for these things that can be met and are stationary. So I have no interest in helping New York. New York famously as well, you know, the Bit license was a problem there. You couldn't buy BlockFi products there. It's just like, it's a gong show. That's what happens when political bureaucracy gets in the way of productive people. People just say, fuck it. They go somewhere else. And then you watch other places flourish instead. And you're seeing that. So, you know, the only person I think of any value who's really come to New York in the last few years is Kevin Durant. And even he probably regrets it. So not a surprise here. Sucks, but not a surprise.
Well, speaking of value, the students in the United States, they're going to get some really good value, looks like, moving forward. Right now, the Biden administration has allowed 40,000 of their students' loans to be erased. So 40,000 lucky borrowers had their student loans disappeared. There's a remaining 3.6 million students that have loans that, in totality, it's $1.7 trillion that's outstanding. $1.7 trillion, that's quite a bit. Considering that they rake in around $4 trillion on taxes, that's a huge number in comparison to. But from what I understand, it looks like the wheels are in motion for this to come to become a reality where they might forgive the student loans. One person is going to have it forgiven, but everybody's going to have to feel the pinch on this one because the money just doesn't disappear. It gets passed on to everybody else. That's one. That's something that people have to realize. The students, they're going to be happy about this. But it's the remaining population that is going to have to pay for this. It's a lot of money, $1.7 trillion. I talked about what is a trillion before. Take a look, do a visualization, just do it, like compare what a trillion is to a million or a billion. It is a huge number. $1.7 trillion is not small. If the United States is just going to eat that and pass it on to their citizens, they're doing their citizens a disservice. And what are they doing? The people that borrowed the money and have it forgiven, they learned absolutely nothing. There's no lesson to be learned here. And the only thing that they know is that whatever stupid decisions they make, they'll just get they'll get rewarded. So, yeah, that's definitely not good news, in my opinion.
I totally agree. There's a lot of crooked incentives in education. You know, I was thinking about this walking my dog the other day. Is there anyone who can really make the case that universities should be taken seriously when their entire business model is based on decision-making of 16-year-olds? Like it's really not, right? It cannot be taken seriously. That institution, that post-secondary educational sphere is a joke. It's a joke. And, you know, I at that $1.7 trillion, that represents a lot of lost value. People taking shitty jobs because they can't afford the payments on the loan. They got to find whatever job they can. And then they can't get ahead in the career they wanted to, or can't start a business, or don't come up with the idea that they may have otherwise come up with, or start a family. And it's absolutely crippling to a modern economy to have to deal with that level of debt for an education that really doesn't net you anything. It doesn't net you anything most of the time, unless you're in STEM. And even then, you know, if you don't know the right people, you didn't play the right intramural sport, you didn't, you know, date the right girl or guy, you're still going to be behind the eight ball. It's really tough. And I really like the way that I've started thinking about this, that, like I said, a $1 trillion racket that operates exclusively on the decision-making of 16 and 17-year-olds, it cannot be taken seriously. And yet here we are. They're you know, required basically to get any job of worth in the United States and in Canada. So make of that what you will, man. There's something wrong with that, but we're not going to solve that problem here tonight. That's for sure.
Hell no. Tennessee, we talked about this very briefly on the beginning of the show. Well, from what I understand, I did some digging here. They're looking for a vendor to help them manage quote unquote unclaimed crypto. So they don't have any Bitcoin currently on their balance sheet. They're simply looking for a vendor to be prepared in the event that unclaimed virtual currency is remitted to the state's unclaimed property program. So if somehow they are going to be getting a hold of unclaimed crypto, they want to have somebody that's going to help them, a vendor that's going to help them manage it. So from the way I understand it, it's not them adding it to their balance sheet. It's if they are somehow confiscating it from people, then they just need a way to manage it. So it's really not a bullish story. It's just a ho-hum story more than anything else.
How do you get a hold of unmanaged crypto? How does that happen?
If they've done some illegal activities and you repossess...
How would they get it? You'd have to give it to them, right?
If it's in a wallet, a hardware wallet, somehow you have to give it to them, yes. But if it's sitting on an exchange and they could issue a subpoena to get it, then it's a different story.
This theme of keys, holding your keys and making sure that you custody your own stuff continues to be relevant with some of the stories we've been talking about the last few weeks. It's never been more important to hold your own keys and to make sure you're securing your own Bitcoin. It's really the key part of the whole self-sovereignty toolkit. Holding your own money, holding your own assets, spending them as you see fit, and making them, you know, close to or as close to unconfiscatable as you can. And this is another great example, right? It's something you can't forget. You've been around enough time, probably, if you're listening to this show, it's time to self-custody if you haven't already. Start doing it.
Yeah, agreed. Central African Republic. This story was just released yesterday from Forbes. I don't know if this is true or not. So there's not much supporting evidence. So if we're celebrating this, I don't know if we should be. So if you hear it online or read about it online, look at it and just kind of raise an eyebrow if this is really true, because it looks like they're saying that they're becoming the first African nation to adopt Bitcoin as a payment currency. This is from Forbes Monaco. I'm not sure if this is true or not, but I'm going to take this as probably not true. So that's why I'm not out there celebrating on Bitcoin Twitter. And I would suggest you do the same. Be very skeptical about this story. Nothing about this seems like it's true, but the fuck, I could be wrong.
It's Forbes Monaco, if my memory serves, right? It's like Forbes
Monaco, yeah.
Yeah, offshoot of you know, a publication that's already really not that reliable. So I don't know. Listen, I'm waiting for Ethan Liu to tell me that the Central African Republic's taking Bitcoin. Otherwise, I'm not buying it. Ethan, you're my source for news now, buddy, if you're listening. That's it. It's the only person I'm going to.
Somebody did note that an adjacent country to them is Chad. I'm not sure if you saw that. So Chad is a country that's just adjacent to this. So it makes sense that if Chad is nearby, Bitcoin is involved. So
the Chad borders actually then look like the Chad meme as well. I don't know if you know that, but.
Oh, and the last story I have, I'm not sure if you saw, but Binance, they had a new emoji that they released on Twitter.
Oh my God.
And it was a swastika, or at least resembled a swastika.
How does that happen? How does that happen? Like, who decided to make that like the public facing logo?
Well, I got some information from you, and from Binance, they say, we're not sure how that emoji got through several layers of review without So there were several layers. Must have been three or four guys that are just sleeping on a job, but it passed them.
Unreal.
That's fucked up, man. That this would be released.
Hey, and, man, like Len, that I don't care what language. I know Binance is a overseas company. Everyone knows what a swastika looks like. That's inexcusable. I can't believe that. No one is anyone gonna be fired over that? Like, who's on the cross for this that I can see suffering for their mistakes? Is there anyone? Or I gotta just imagine.
No. They said that the people that were that let this go through, they're gonna start getting their paychecks in Doge instead. So they are gonna suffer.
Oh, big time.
So yeah, that's it. I have for the news. I do have a no coiner of the week. I don't have a Bitcoiner of the week.
I don't have either. Before you do yours, I'll just say it's been really great to see how, again, in this bear cycle, I say bear cycle, although I don't think we're really in a bear cycle, but as the price action goes sideways, compared to where the price action was going sideways, you know, 2018, the number of educational tweets I see about Bitcoin, the number of ways to get informed, you know, the liveliness of the chat, the download numbers for the show, it's really good to see that people are still interested in Bitcoin, even though the price is not ripping to new highs every week like it was for basically a year in 2020, 2021. It's really been awesome to see. So I hope that keeps up. That's not a Bitcoiner or no coiner, just an observation of mine. It made me think that we're headed in the right direction here. I know sometimes the news stories maybe give the opposite impression, but you got to feel good about the plebs. That's for sure. This time around, it feels like we got a really good crowd.
We've been holding the line. That's the way to do it. I'm looking at it. And my no coiner, I'm going to the well. I've gone to this well too many times, but I have to go to it again. And it's Elizabeth Warren yet again.
The hand. This is what people come to the show for.
But I have to go for this one. She tweeted today about what happened with Twitter, Elon Musk purchasing it. And she said in her tweet, "This deal is dangerous for our democracy. Billionaires like Elon Musk play by a different set of rules than everybody else, accumulating power for their own gain. We need a wealth tax and strong rules.
Wealth tax.
Big tech's accountable." So I like the fact that she's calling him out by playing by a different set of rules, and he's accumulating power for his own gain. Very interesting that she's the one that's saying this, because if she is to look into the mirror, she will be seeing the exact same person she's calling out. She is no different than Elon Musk. It's just the level of wealth that they have is much, much different. But also, where was she to talk about Jeff Bezos when he purchased the Washington Post? Nowhere to be seen or heard. Because the reason why is the Washington Post is more favorable to her and her party. She is a no-coiner every week. She could be one. She's a no-coiner Hall of Famer, period. And I could go on and on about her, but we're running out of time. That's why she's my no-coiner of the week, that she is herself trying to accumulate power for her own gain, and she's calling out Elon Musk. Come on, that doesn't make sense to me. You're the one that's doing it. So, yeah.
I can't believe you hit her with the one-finger salute again. There's got to be a montage of one-finger salutes that you've given during the no-coiner of the week rant. We got to put that. We'll start another channel for that. third channel. That's it for tonight then. That's good. Because I want to watch the Raptors. I want to do a little bit of post-game with you guys in the chat. You've been great as always. Chat is buzzing. So I really appreciate that. I know Len does as well. It's good to bounce ideas off you guys. And we got some...
The price.
Oh, right. Well, I also don't even want to look. Did we?
Yeah, well, it's not a big one, but we got a pump. I'll take it.
$40,615 US. Yeah. That ain't bad. Retirement's back on the table.
It's always on the table. $51,779 in Canadian dollars. That's not too shabby. But what could you buy for $51,779 these days? Not even a truck.
No, not even. You can't even fill the tank of a truck, actually. So,
yeah. It is what
God,
it is.
God bless everyone. Stick around for the after show if you're here already. If you're not and you're on audio, go to YouTube. Watch the last 10 or 15 where we talk about things that are not fit for mixed company, but we do it anyway. So we'll see you there.
Take care.